Welcome. This is William Evans, and you are listening to Shifting Gears. We're honored today to have as our guest the mayor of Carbondale, Dan Richardson. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Will.
It's been a warm summer.
It sure has.
What's your sense about the trajectory we are on?
Well, it sure seems that we're seeing more frequent extreme weather, whether it be wildfire, heat, floods, droughts, hurricanes. And so to me, it seems pretty clear that we'll be seeing more of that in the future.
Yeah, extreme events.
Mm-hmm.
Can you travel back with us to 2005? And tell us about being selected the director of the Aspen Program to Engage Global Warming Canary Initiative.
Sure. Prior to that, I had had my own business designing and consulting in residential construction that evolved into consulting on clean energy, mainly energy efficiency in the residential sector. But I was also a faithful follower of Randy Udall and all the efforts that he was pursuing, including the larger issue of climate change and peak oil, and saw the Canary Initiative as sort of the manifestation of not only his work, but others, Auden Schindler and the city of Aspen and others, and was excited about the possibilities. Aspen clearly has and had back then a track record of being successful in environmental initiatives. They had the resources to make things happen. And there was some great thought leaders involved in that program that made up the coalition. And so I was excited to expand my work into climate change and the larger aspect of clean energy beyond the residential. So I was quite honored to be selected and enjoyed my time while I was there.
And I assume it would be safe to say you stepped into this challenge believing the Canary Initiative could take flight and have a local impact and possibly on a larger scale.
Absolutely. I don't think I would have accepted the position if I didn't believe that.
What happened?
Well, I think initially what happened was we were pretty successful at launching some of the original priorities. We successfully completed a local climate mitigation study, had adopted a climate action plan. We took all the city's facilities and put them under sort of a facility management structure. We created one of the funnest things I did was created a greenhouse gas budget and trading system among departments. And we certainly raised awareness both locally, statewide, and even on a national level. So I think what happened was we had some great success in the year and a half that I was there. What I realized over time was that it wasn't the right fit for me for a couple reasons. But we also, I think that was the peak of awareness around climate change. Maybe not the peak, but one of the first, the early peaks of awareness. And so we were kind of riding that high. And I think we were a victim of our own success because not only the Canary Initiative, but others around the country and world really brought a lot of awareness, which resulted in a lot of pushback from other interests. So I think I also felt that while I was there. And what I realized was we clearly, as a community, we clearly have the technical expertise, we have the financial resources, but still there was this obstacle that was preventing us from making real change, and that was just this differing of opinions and differing of priorities. And I saw that as a real hurdle. That isn't what stopped me in my tracks, but that was certainly something I was aware of.
And at one point, I understood you saw a connection between a lack of identity and an inability to act in the face of global warming and an inability to make necessary life-sustaining choices.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how I would word that. I think that clearly, as I said, it's the reason we haven't made more progress on mitigating and reducing the impacts of climate change, I think is less about technical and financial resources than it is about how we as a society collectively view the problem being essentially excessive pollution. And so I do think that there's an identity of who are we? You know, are we an economic powerhouse that sees economic progress as a higher priority over, as you say, life-sustaining choices? Or are we a community that embraces or prioritizes life-sustaining choices over economic gain? And I think there's not an easy answer. It's a gray area probably within all of us. But really coming to terms with that on an individual as well as a societal level, I think is a big part of the challenges we face right now.
Who are we individually and collectively?
Yes. They're intertwined, right?
Well, they totally are, because a healthy identity is dependent upon a community that values your contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And you lining yourself up with your authentic identity in a way that is of value in an exchange with the community.
Yeah, I think obviously we can't function in a community without functioning as an individual. And so how we choose to function as an individual, it depends on how we view ourselves and what we see as our values. And I think we all have internal struggles about how to do that. And I think those struggles of individuals, myself included, perhaps is a challenge to the communication and the progress that we need to make on climate change.
You mentioned the importance of listening. I certainly have memories of experiences in situations where someone wasn't listening, and I realized that I was wasting my breath in trying to present a perspective, and my identity was shut down in that situation.
Mm-hmm. I think you sort of hit the nail on the head with me, and one of the reasons why I decided that the job up in Aspen wasn't as much of a priority as it once was I felt that the biggest obstacle was communication. And I learned a lot after the fact, so it's not that I had all those revelations before I left, but as I reflect now, I think we are limited with the amount of progress we can make, because I think there is still a wall between many different factors in society where people, as you say, just sort of gave up because they're not being heard. So our task, I believe, is how do both sides, if that's the way you want to phrase it, how do we listen better, and how do we become more effective at being heard? Because that's a real obstacle right now.
Well, it is, and it is a true challenge for me to hold the tension and the opportunity between what may appear to be two contrasting perspectives, one being the system of exchange we've embraced in America and the priority we place upon that system, and secondly, but for me no less, is my personal way of life, where I live in kinship with all creation. We are all family in connection. And I am sustained by my exchange with the source water, the garden, the air I breathe. And with that goes a high level of responsibility that the source water I receive is the source water I send downstream. And that conversation is at the core of what I think you're telling me.
I think what I would say is perhaps I understand what you're trying to say, but I think the challenge in that is most, certainly most Carbondalians, I would say that they They want to protect the source water. They want to be environmental stewards. But I think our society is well beyond the point of that black and white. You're either sustainable or you're not, right? Our lives are way too complex now to really say that any of us live without some level of environmental footprint. So that puts everything into this gray area of what's acceptable and what's not in terms of progress, what's acceptable in terms of life-sustaining choices, you know, from the food we buy, from the house we live in, from how we get from place to place. And so that becomes a difficult question. And I think getting back to your point about identity, if we identify ourselves in a particular way and someone calls into question that identity, whether it's accurate or not, oftentimes that wall goes up and it becomes an us versus them, whether that's, you know, on a larger scale or just on an individual basis. And to me, that's a real challenge.
Oh, it is, because at least I was trained in contest behavior. So I told you I got hooked this week,
right,
in a situation, and I wasn't in a partnership at all. I was in a contest. That's not always the sustainable path. That is a way that can easily become dominated by our life-protecting nervous system to the extent that I'm afraid to lose. I'm afraid to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I drop out of that partnership position and worldview, the collateral damage gets bigger. And the consequences to the source water get bigger.
Just as an aside, I think about that often as a representative on the RAFTA board. RAFTA doesn't exist without its member organizations. And so when I'm making decisions on the RAFTA board, am I representing Carbondale's interests or the region's interests? And the answer is it should be both. But sometimes the two are at odds.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's a day-by-day decision process. But I think there too, in the broader context, are we representing our individual interest or the societal interest? And that's the internal battle we all have.
You're listening to a conversation with Dan Richardson, mayor of Carbondale. It's also an opportunity to remind you that this time of year, we have an annual fund drive, and it's an opportunity at the end of this broadcast for you to send in a life-sustaining gift from your harvest, and we, in exchange, will provide a wonderful diversity of community programming to you for another year. Or call 963-0139 with your financial pledge and speak with a volunteer or member of the staff. We're grateful for your continuing support, and if you've never donated before, we look forward to getting acquainted. So you were talking about what you experience when somebody is not able to understand your perspective. What are you learning in that situation? Because it's one that I think we continue to learn on for a long time.
Well, what I've learned is I'm not always sure of the perspective I've articulated. So your question is, what do I do when someone doesn't understand my perspective? I'm learning, and have by no means mastered it, but I'm learning to really question how I view my perspective and how I articulate that to others, to do the best I can to make sure that what they heard is what I think. And that's, to me, step one, because it could be that someone heard something completely different than what I thought I said. So that's tough, but again, that's something that I'm learning. And I also think that there is an art that I'm trying to better understand in presenting information, in this case, my perspective, in a way that resonates with the person with whom I'm speaking. So if I want to make sure I'm heard, then I do the best I can to present it in a way that I think they like to listen.
And after you've reflected on it, is it what you really intended and wanted to say?
Right. Yeah, like I said, that's step one.
In 2002, I asked Brooke LeVan, what's the biggest barrier to sustainability? And he immediately responded, knowing who you are. When you know who you are, he said, you make different decisions.
I think that's well said.
So what we started out talking about, I think, is what I would call authentic identity in a time when other agendas and false identities, as well as fear of identity theft, are also in the field we dwell in.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'd ask you to repeat that so I know what you're looking for.
We all want to belong and be seen and be heard. And in addition to all that external phenomenon, there is an internal pulsating presence within us that I have a good friend who says one of the secrets to life is lining up what you do with who you are. And I would put that into the realm of authentic identity.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a time when other people have an agenda for you. I was involved with an interesting program down in Grand Junction years ago called the Dialogue Project.
Mm-hmm.
And two women who I came in late, so I was catching up, and two women who talked to me said, and they were really angry, they said, I realized that my whole life I've been trained to be a consumer. And they were angry. They were reactive to that because they were beginning to access their power as women, and they'd had enough of that consumer business. They had another vision that they were interested in partnering with, an authentic identity.
Mm-hmm. Well said again. And I think, to your point, maybe what they were upset about was that some other force was trying to direct them in a certain way. But I don't think that's inherently bad. I've had conversation with my two boys, essentially being mayor. It's a huge part of my job to influence others. But the question is, what's the motive behind the influence, and how do you act? Is it authentic or not? And do you act in it with integrity? So I think the inherent action of to try and influence others is not bad, but like you said, is whether or not there's authenticity behind it.
Well, and whether it's an equitable exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was trained in contest behavior, I was more in a taking mode rather than in a partnership exchange mode.
I don't know if I would use the word equitable, though. I would say perhaps just and well-intended, because certainly, you know, who's to say with this exchange we're having today, is it equitable? Who knows? But it might not need to be. I might be giving more now, or I might be taking more, and then the next conversation is different. So perhaps it's semantics, but I don't know if it needs to be equitable.
Well, if there's a balance between your speaking and my listening and the reverse, there's a huge learning and connection that occurs in conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I make a distinction between discussions and conversations. A school principal here in Carbondale once told me both bullies and victims have a weak identity.
I would agree with that.
So it's continually growing and changing for me, but are you comfortable talking about what you've learned about your identity and who you are?
I would like to think that I've learned more about my identity, but the more I uncover them, you know, as they say, the more I know, the more I realize I don't know.
Yeah, I can understand saying that.
But I think perhaps one of the more important things I've learned is to let go of the past and let go of judgment. My wife is fond of saying, we do the best we can and we move on. And I'm confident that in almost every situation, I'm bringing almost the best. I'm bringing the best I can at that moment. And I certainly can't change the past. And as soon as I let go of that, I realize that I'm going to make mistakes. And I can't change them once I've made them. And that has helped me to be less tied to, again, things that I perceive as mistakes in the past, as well as others' judgments of me. So I bring the best I can, and then I move on. And that has helped me gain confidence in what I'm doing and be less susceptible to self-harm, I guess, emotional self-harm.
Yeah, and that's, I like the way you say that, because I would line judgment right up in there in the front row of self-harm, because it as quickly as anything will shut down my authentic identity.
Agreed.
So that's a powerful insight to have with two boys who are learning how to be a man.
I hope it's working.
May it be so.
Right. Well, I appreciate the thoughtful questions. I think your questions are getting to the heart of the conversations you and I have had in the past. And I would say you introduced me as the mayor of Carbondale, which is certainly the most public face I wear. But as with many people, I wear many different hats. But as mayor and as someone involved in politics, I do really think that this issue that we're talking about is the most important place for us to put our intentions, our thoughts, and our priorities, because it can have, as you talk about, one of the larger challenges we face as mankind, climate change. It affects topics as large as that, or it affects the small, much less significant in the global scheme, issues that we as a community face on a day-to-day basis. And the more we can learn about ourselves and how to communicate our intentions and hear others, I think the stronger we become. So I love the fact that we're having this conversation.
Well, I'm grateful you stepped into engaging with this. And the balance between the enormity of who we are and how we get along together is really our connection to what's going on with the climate and the source water. You mentioned earlier the gray zone. I've been watching that area. I sense every day the gray zone grows larger. Potentially, it is a place of great beauty, wonderful identities and resources, where seeds wait to awaken and sprout, connecting up with new growth. But as it exists today, the gray zone is a downward spiral, swallowing gifts, beautiful identities, and resources. It's like sending someone or something to the landfill because I don't know what to do with it, or watching something disappear downstream around the corner and believing it's gone away when the bulldozer covers someone over. Actually, the gray zone downstream in the landfill do contain precious life and sustainable visions. The gray zone's calling for us to enter. Elders have been entering the gray zone in this way for many thousands of years. What is exciting for me about our conversations has been realizing we both see a way for healthy new growth. Perhaps that will be our next conversation. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Will.
This is KDNK. You've been listening to a conversation with Dan Richardson, our esteemed mayor of Carbondale, and we've been talking about the role of authentic, connected identity in life-sustaining behavior and decisions. Thank you for listening.